Before I talk about the scriptures, let me start by taking attendance. Is the family of Irene Alexander out here somewhere? Mm-hmm. All right. I have it on good authority that today Irene is turning 95. We're celebrating her 95th birthday. So happy birthday, Irene. Yes. Oh. I personally don't feel you look a day over 94. Yes. So we're going to sing happy birthday to Irene. Maestro, if you please. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Irene. Happy birthday to you. Many more. Congratulations. Yes. All right. In the gospel today, we have to recall where we're at. For the last several weeks, our Sunday gospels have all been occurring during that first Holy Week, the preparation of the Passover feast, when every Jewish person on the planet had to come to Jerusalem for that entire week in order to be present for the feast day. There were a lot of people crammed into the small walled city. During Holy Week, the week of Passover, there were three times as many inhabitants squeezing into Jerusalem. And so tensions were already riding high. And where we find Jesus today is estimated to be on Thursday morning of Holy Week. And so that night he would go into the upper room and begin the Last Supper with his disciples. And all this Holy Week, ever since he entered the holy city on Palm Sunday with the other pilgrims coming to the feast, Jesus has been in the temple, because nowhere on earth did he feel closer to the Father in heaven than when he was in the Father's house, the temple at Jerusalem. And he spent some of that time preaching and teaching, but a lot of that time, what we've been primarily hearing about in these parables and these Sunday Gospels of these recent Sundays, is a debate with his detractors, his critics, his enemies, those who have all joined forces against him. And by this point, there were nine of them. There were the Sanhedrin, for all intents and purposes, the Supreme Court of the Jewish faith, the Sadducees, the Pharisees, the chief priests, the scribes, the elders, the scholars of the law, the Herodians, the Romans. Jesus truly is surrounded. And he knew it. He knew all these people were waiting for him in Jerusalem, but he went anyway. Most of those groups didn't like each other, but they hate Jesus more. And today, in the middle of the 22nd chapter of Matthew, we find two such groups that are very opposed to each other, the Herodians and the Pharisees, but they've joined forces in the plot against Jesus. And so they're setting a trap for him. They ask him a question, and Jesus tries to thread the needle in how he answers this question, because either way, he's going to upset one of these groups. And they said, "Is it lawful for us or not to pay the census tax?" We must recall that by this point, Israel and Judah have been occupied by Rome for a century. Rome occupied just about everything in the known world of that time. They had conquered all around the Mediterranean Sea, North Africa, the Orient and Asia, Eastern Europe, and it went as far up in Europe into what today we call the United Kingdom. And you've heard that phrase, all roads lead to Rome. That empire had an impressive system of roads for its armies and commerce to march back and forth. But who built those roads? Slaves from these occupied territories like Israel and Judah. And how are they paid for? By the very, very onerous and burdensome taxation that came out of the provinces flowing up into the capital. Most people in Israel and Judah couldn't afford to pay this tax. And of course, they despised being an occupied territory. They wanted their sovereign freedom. And it was that kind of taxation without representation that gave birth to our own country back at the time of the Revolutionary War. But the Herodians, on the one hand, they're fine with it. They're fine with paying that tax because part of it was used to support the king they're supporting, Herod Antipas, son of Herod the Great. Herod was a puppet. He had no real power or authority except to collect taxes and to give most of it to Rome. But what he kept, he was also able to spread out among his cronies and followers. So they'd rather people continue paying the census tax. But the Pharisees, on the other hand, they didn't just have a political problem with paying that tax. they believe there was a religious problem with that tax, and they want to see what Jesus will say about it. And Jesus asked to see the coin, and he wants to know whose image is on it. And at that time in the history of the world, it would have said Tiberius Caesar, son of the great Augustus, divine high priest. And there is the problem, divine. It meant that to the pagans of Rome, Tiberius Caesar and anyone who held the role of Caesar as emperor of Rome was to be revered as a living god. But didn't we just hear Isaiah say in the first reading, there is no other Lord, there is no God but me? That's where the Pharisees would have found this to be problematic. Believing in the first of the Ten Commandments, hear, O Israel, the Lord your God is one, him alone shall you serve, and you shall not have graven images of false idols. And so for the Pharisees, if they were to pay this tax, it's going to be seen as breaking their holy commandments, recognizing the divinity of an emperor, a living God. That just can't be. And so if Jesus said, it's okay to pay the census tax, the Pharisees are going to accuse him of blasphemy. If Jesus said, it's not okay to pay the census tax, the Herodians over here are going to accuse him of treason and insurrection against the empire. So once again, threading the needle, be careful what you say. But instead, Jesus gives a more unusual answer. Give to Caesar what is Caesar's, give to God what is God's. In Jesus' mind, that currency, it came from Caesar. To a certain extent, it belongs to Caesar. He's going to end up with it anyway. Only Imperial Rome had the authority and the capability to print money and to mint currency. And so most of it was going to come from Rome, and most of it was going to flow back to Rome in the form of these taxes. So it's already his. Give to Caesar what is Caesar's. You're still not free. You can't buy your freedom from this man who will not give it to you. But give to God what is God's. What is that? In a word, everything. Because we would not live, there would not be this world, there would not be this solar system, there would not be any star or planet or anything on them were it not for God. Our mere existence is completely, totally, and irrevocably dependent upon him. So when Jesus said, give to God what is God's, that means everything. Your life, your loves, your faith, your faults, your failings, everything. And so we see then on the scales that God's going to end up with a lot more than Caesar will, because there'd be no Caesar if there was no God who let him live. Indeed, Caesar was not a deity. His life was dependent on another, just as ours are today. Jesus was telling them what he himself was about to do. Remember, it's the morning of Holy Thursday. Within a day, he will be dead. And on that cross on Calvary on Good Friday, Jesus gave to Caesar what was Caesar's. Caesar believed he owned everybody in those occupied provinces, and by Pontius Pilate sentencing Jesus to die, Caesar believes he can claim Jesus' life. And Jesus was charged with treason against Rome, pretending to be a king to the Jews. He will give to Caesar what Caesar thinks belongs to Caesar. But Jesus will also give to God what belongs to God, and that is everything. Everything he has poured out for us for the forgiveness of our sins and for our salvation. Jesus, yet again, making a prophecy and one that he will fulfill the next day. What does it mean for us? Yes, we can give to Caesar what is Caesar's. We have to pay our taxes. We need to cast our votes in the upcoming election, as many already have and many continue to do and hopefully will do on election day. And when we do, our faith should have something to say about that, that we shouldn't leave it outside the ballot box. But remember, everything comes from God, including us. Everything belongs to God. Everything we have. God owes us nothing. And yet he has given us everything. So now let's cycle back to the fact that this is World Mission Sunday. And that's an opportunity, yes, for us to pray, as we should, for missionaries who go off to foreign countries and build wells and houses and hospitals and orphanages and chapels and preach the gospel to people who do not know God. But World Mission Sunday is also an opportunity for us, even here, in America, in the 21st century, to be missionaries in our own right, in our own place, in our own state and life. Because whereas the gospel is being spread to the furthest corners of the earth, it's not really being preached or practiced as much as it once was here in our own land. Indeed, fully 1 in 3 of Americans in our country right now claim that they do not believe in God. They do not practice any religion whatsoever. And yet we see that any country that frees itself from the anchor of our cross of Jesus Christ then finds itself adrift on stormy seas. And the seas have been pretty stormy in our country as of late. It is an opportunity for us then who claim to know God, to love God and to serve him, to make him known in our homes, in our families, in this church, in our community, in our schools, in our workplace, not by the soapbox sermons we might give, but by the lived witness and practice of our faith. By reminding people that God is God and we are not, reminding people that God is God and we are his, that he is the coach and we play his plays that he calls, or else we find ourselves on the bench. And so then we all have a mission to fulfill. And we say, well, I'm not a missionary. Ask someone else. But God has called you by name. Look what he did in the first reading. Isaiah was talking about Cyrus, king of Persia. Persia, present-day Iran. That God was going to choose a non-Jewish king to set Israel free. Isaiah was preaching this message 2 centuries before Cyrus was born, 8 centuries before Jesus was born. And it was during a time when he and many others were living in exile from a war that seemed without end. And yet Isaiah was already looking beyond the end of the war that his people were fighting against Assyria to the north, whose capital is Nineveh. And he was already talking about how the next one was going to end. It's like flipping to the end of the book to see what's going to happen. At the time that Isaiah is referring to, it was the Babylonian exile. And that was Nebuchadnezzar and the armies from the east that would come to conquer Israel more than once to spoil the temple, take the men back to work as slaves. But God was going to choose an army more powerful than the Babylonians to conquer Babylon for one purpose only, to set the Israelites free and let them return to their promised land flowing with milk and honey once more. And thus it was that Cyrus, who was not Jewish, Cyrus, who was not circumcised, Cyrus, who did not believe in the one God, can't deny or dispute the fact that whether he believes in God or not, he comes from God. There's only one. If anybody's alive, it's because God lets them be so. And thus it was that God chooses whomever he wills to do whatever he wills as long as he wills it. And he chose Cyrus to conquer Babylon to set his people free. That is the power and might and mercy of God. So great is his desire to see his people free. He'll go to great lengths to make it happen. Even people that don't know him and don't believe in him might end up doing his will. If people that don't know God end up doing his will, how much more incumbent is it on us? How much more will it be required of us who do claim not only to know God, but to love him, that we would lay down our lives for him because we're supposed to love him with all of our heart, mind, soul, and strength? How much more will it be required of us to do his mission because he has also called us by name? Remember, my friends, he owes us nothing. He has given us everything. So yes, we'll give to Caesar what is Caesar's, but everything comes from God. Everything belongs to God, and we and everyone should do all that we can to give God the glory, honor, and praise. Let us stand and profess our faith.